probably somewhat natural then that we came to a conclusion that a chronology would give us the necessary framework to better engage our visitors. We were also aware that Munnings lived in a time of great change. He was born a Victorian, witnessed two world wars, women's emancipation, the rise of mechanisation, and he died in the atomic age. Two or three decades of his life are still within living memory, and this would provide a social context into which people could relate to him outside the bubble of art. Our aim was to take visitors on a journey with the hope that they would understand and, more importantly, remember three or four key points about Munnings that they could take away with them and share with others. So where do we start? The museum's collection is really quite representative of Munnings' 70-year career. It consists of 650 oil paintings, hundreds of works on paper, sketches, sketchbooks, and a very small number of sculptures. The collection spans work from his boyhood through to the last years of his life. It contains some of the iconic equestrian images for which he is known worldwide, but it also demonstrates the breadth of subjects he was interested in, which are less well known. From early poster designs to portraits and landscapes. Significantly, a large number of the paintings are oil sketches and preparatory works. Munnings was an extremely prolific painter and often did several versions of the same scene before settling on the final outcome. The collection therefore has the unique ability to illustrate the process that Munnings went through in the creation of a picture. Orientation around the house has remained much the same for a long time and has a natural flow. The main part of the house, which is mostly Georgian, has not changed since Munnings lived there, but in the 1970s, pantries and storerooms in the Tudor part of the building were converted into two larger spaces, more gallery-like in their nature, and very much needed to display a growing number of paintings being actively collected at that time. In the main part of the house, there are four rooms downstairs and two rooms upstairs, all off a large main hall, staircase and landing. Visitors enter through the front door and arrive into the impressive double-height hall, which has a Georgian fanlight. As they move through the house, the stewards advise, keep turning left and you can't go wrong, and that's proven to be true. Last season we attempted to alter the order in which the rooms were entered upstairs, but despite the additional signage and the best efforts of our stewards, visitors tended to go the natural way round. Weirdly, there were just the right number of rooms in the house to accommodate the number of segments from the timeline when we broke it down into its significant parts. Once we'd settled this, the two converted spaces remained to be filled. The museum has a large number of visitors who come specifically to see pictures of horses, and we wanted to ensure a continued engagement with them, but on a more thoughtful level. We decided to develop an exhibition drawing on the collection's capacity to trace the development of image from sketch to finished canvas. This would also give us the opportunity to display rarely seen sketches and drawings, though practically we hadn't quite worked out how to do that. As we began selecting pictures for the timeline, we really felt that we were establishing a clear sense of Munnings' development as an artist. However, we were aware that we were moving towards a more recognisable concept of a gallery or museum, and away from a sense of a home. This was particularly emphasised by our decision to add at least one traditional introductory text panel into each room. There he is, isn't he handsome? Castle House was a much-loved home, and in the early 1930s, his housemaid wrote, "Munnings had a kind heart and this made him lovable in the home. Castle House had a certain quality and atmosphere, the vital spark being Munnings, his paintings giving the quality, solidarity and wealth, thus creating the main essence of the place. And today we are aware that the very experience of being in the artist's home has a positive effect on our visitors. Comments such as, "Loved this visit to a wonderful home," and "such a beautifully preserved home, thank you," are heard time and time again, so we were extremely conscious of maintaining his personality at the forefront of our visitor experience. With this in mind, we decided to weave Munnings into as much of the interpretive text as possible. We are very fortunate in that we have his autobiography, which he wrote in 3 volumes, which meant that we could quote directly from the horse's mouth, so to speak. Even writing as a relatively old man, his artistic memory conjures up people, scenes, realisations and doubts from his life, and he commits them to paper. So we get a real sense of the context, artistically, socially and personally, in which his pictures were made. Going a step beyond simply including quotes on panels and labels, we decided to name the rooms in the house from the chapters in the books, as these were very personal and descriptive. Some of my personal favourites are the first room, Songs of My Youth, one of the middle rooms, The Caravan Moves On, and the final room, To Conclude. The dressing of the rooms was also key to emphasising the homely nature of the museum. The house still contains a lot of furniture, clocks, ornaments, painting equipment, props and personal objects once belonging to Munnings, as well as quite a famous stuffed Pekingese dog called Black Knight, who belonged to Lady Munnings. The decision making around their placement was twofold. In the majority of cases, items were either retained in or moved back to the rooms in which they had originally stood. For reference, we were able to use photos from the archive and an inventory which was made in 1972. In other cases, items were placed to better support the timeline. As an example, Black Knight here, who lived during the 1950s, was placed by the fire in the final room rather than in his original spot in the dining room. And it was happy coincidence when the lampshade decorated for Munnings by his lifelong friend Laura Knight and kept in the drawing room coincided with the dedication of that room to Munnings' time in Cornwall, where he first met her. To enhance the atmosphere, we also bought a gramophone and a radio case which play music hall songs and clips from Munnings' 1949 Royal Academy presidential speech, respectively. On a practical note, placing pictures in a timeline presented a couple of challenges. The first room, the library, is dedicated to introducing the boy Munnings and ends with his first years as a maturing artist of 22. As the first room visited, we wanted to avoid overwhelming our visitors with the largest variety of works in different media, as well as size, shape and framing, there was the potential